is 2 minutes past 8 o'clock, and it's time for Business Half Hour here on Classic FM 97.3. I have Taiwo Oyewole with me in the studio and another interesting guest. You get to meet him later on in the show. Good morning, Taiwo. How are you?
Good morning, Bukola. I'm very well, thank you. And you?
Not bad at all, thank God.
How was your weekend?
It was okay.
Yes. Not bad, not bad. Ready for a new week.
Okay. So you're smarting from the defeat?
Oh, we were defeated yesterday. Okay.
Oh, you didn't realize that.
It was just a game, you know. And okay. I think everybody should brace up for it.
And let's move on.
Yes. Good morning, Lagos. Welcome to a beautiful new day here. This is the Business Half Hour in partnership with Naira Metrics. Just to remind you once again, you can catch the podcast from tomorrow on the Naira Metrics website. Today, we'll be talking about healthcare, talking about DNA. DNA, correct me now. Let me see if I remember my biology. Deoxyribonucleic acid. Am I correct?
Correct.
Brilliant. So, we're talking about that and how it's being stored, and essentially how healthcare can be improved by better understanding who we are, what you know, what causes us to fall ill, what causes us to live better, and so on and so forth. So our guest in the studio will enlighten us a bit more about that without going too technical. More importantly, they just raised some money. The company is barely, 7 months old, you know, and they raised a staggering sum of money. He'll talk about that as well. In that sense, without further ado, I'd let him introduce himself.
Hi, guys. My name is Dr. Abasi Enebong, and I'm the CEO of 54GN. So 54 for the 54 countries in Africa, because we don't have 54 genes in the body. We have more than that. But yes, the name reflects our Pan-African ambitions.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So, I mean, let's get straight to the white elephant in the room. You raised $4.5 million. The interesting thing is not the amount of money that was raised. I mean, it's a staggering sum of money. For those of you that have calculators, you can try and do the conversion into Naira. But what's more interesting is that this is your seed round, and it's almost like the first, the first time you really go out and talk to serious investors out there, and you raise this sum of money. Most people don't get this close, particularly in this part of the world. You know, they do that maybe after they've shown some traction and some, you know, been able to generate some income. Yeah. So what exactly did you tell investors that made them open up their checkbooks to you?
Well, we did show some traction, for sure. But I think it's also because what we are solving is a global problem. So once in our storytelling, we could, switch the context from a just Nigeria African thing to a worldwide issue. I think that's what really connected with them, because what we're doing can actually save lives and solve problems for people of African descent all over the world, but also even people who are not of African descent, right? And so that big opportunity and the traction we're able to show in 3 months was able to get them to come on board.
And it had nothing to do with the way you spoke. It didn't have anything to do with the fact that you've worked in the US and the UK and you work for global organizations. It had nothing to do with any of those.
I mean, all of those things matter, you know. You're the collection of your experiences, right? If I did not have track record and I was talking about what I wanted to do, then there won't be trust, right? But because I had track record, I hopefully also had a good network. And like you said, I had worked in this space globally. So I think it was all of that, you know, definitely helps. But again, without the right story, without the right opportunity, without the right traction, you know, none of it would have come together.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
I know it's not an easy thing standing in front of investors. How many investors did you pitch to before you eventually got this?
It's interesting. I know some people say they pitch to like 50 investors to
get 300.
One. I think we had something like a ratio of a yes for every two or three investors we talked to. So that by 3 weeks we were done. Which is huge, I from what I hear. Yeah.
Again, like I said, a remarkable story. I mean, it's an unusual tale when it comes to raising money, particularly from here, you know. And you have the likes of Y Combinator, 50 years, Better Ventures, KDT Ventures, you know, Hack VC, Tech Hammer, all of them putting money and their trust in you. I'm hoping that you'll be able to help Africa leapfrog this healthcare menace, you know, that we find ourselves in.
So much pressure.
it doesn't show on you though, but yeah, let's have that. So let's dive deep into this. So, okay. 54Gene is what? An African genomics company building the world's largest Pan-African biobank.
Yes.
Do you want to talk to us about what a biobank is?
Okay, so a biobank is a collection of biological samples, genomic or genetic data, and phenotypic data, right? So it's this intersection where you bring different disparate data sources and you use it to research to either understand, you know, the genetic basis of diseases or to find new innovative diagnostics or drugs. Right. Now, biobanks were the domain of governments. Back in the day, it was governments who would set up biobanks because it was exceedingly expensive to do that. Just to sequence a DNA about 15 years ago cost about $1 billion. Just one person's DNA. Today, it costs less than $1,000. Right. So we're also riding on some of the trends that have happened in this space where costs are coming down, the information about how to actually use all that data to come together, you know, has also come to a confluence. And so to an extent, we're riding the wave. But yes, we are collecting or building a Pan-African biobank. And the reason we are doing this is that of the genetic research prior to 2018, only 2% of genomics research was carried out in Africans. Caucasians contributed to nearly 90% of genetic research. Why is that important? It's important because what that means is as drugs become more targeted and personalized, the people who their genomes are used to develop those drugs are the people who benefit from those drugs, right? And so if a continent that contributes right now to 14% or more of the world's population and climbing only contributes to 2% of the research being done, what that means is you and I may not get the treatment we need as we begin to get older and fall ill.
Or we get the treatment, the drugs don't work.
Right now you have, and this is actually real, you have some molecular diagnostics, so targeted diagnostics that say not to be used on people of African descent.
This is correct. So I go to the pharmacy and I try to get stuff for my kids sometimes. The first thing the pharmacists bring out is all these expensive foreign variants of drugs, even so things like paracetamol or ibuprofen or any of these other drugs like that, the cough syrup. And the first thing I tell them is, these things don't work on my kids. And that's the truth. You know? So you know, they take a longer time to work.
Okay.
Give me the local ones is what I ask for.
Okay.
You know? And the doctor had actually told them this once, you know, before. But I thought, oh, they're just trying to promote some of the local pharmaceutical companies. But in reality, that's the truth, you know. So
why do we always ignore things that are ours and we're quick to embrace that from the Western world? With what you have said, there's some things based on our genetical mode, there's some things that will work on us and we'll work on them. So do you have that enlightenment out there for doctors and health workers to have that understanding?
So it's more complex, right? So yes. So, okay, so then some of the new drugs, the targeted drugs that we're talking about, and have not yet even gotten to the shores of Africa. So drugs to treat cancer as effectively or better, it takes about 15 years after they've launched in the US to get into Nigeria, right? Because so there is a big inequality going on in healthcare. Right, so when I was working over there, I would launch drugs globally, and when we're looking at Africa, we look at most African countries as rest of the world. What that means is we have no strategy for bringing that drug into the continent, but we're thinking about how do we take it to the US market, to EU5, to Japan, you know, big markets that we understand. Now, but to what you're saying, there is also another field of medicine called pharmacogenetics. Mm-hmm. Which basically means that the way that basically you have what we call metabolizers, right? Genes that influence the metabolism, you know, how your body breaks down certain drugs. And we are all different in that regard. So there's certain drugs, including pain relief, right, that might work for me that may not work for you because of the genes you carry. And that translates to not just pain, even to antipsychotics for, you know, mental health issues.
Even antihistamines.
Antihistamines. So this, yeah. So in that regard, what you're saying could definitely be true, that some drugs now may not work on your kids. Maybe not because they are locally made or whatever, but there's also the fact that maybe just because of certain genes, you're not metabolizing or breaking down those drugs as they should.
Well, that's part of some of the questions you want to answer.
That's part of some of the questions. And we need to have the data to be able to answer those questions.
So earlier on, you talked about genotypic and phenotypic DNA data sets, you know, as it were. Could you break that down? Because I know that a lot of us will understand that a bit more.
Yeah.
So your genotypes, which is, I was on the AA or...
Oh, no. So
phenotypes and stuff like that. Then that's
so interestingly, in Nigeria, we've created this definition of genotype for AA. No, genotype is your entire genetic makeup, right? Yeah. So it's really the genes that make up your physical appearance. So when we say AA as a genotype, it's just for that particular gene. Right, it's the gene, or the SS is the gene that codes for sickle cell, that basically leads to sickle cell. Sickle cell is the phenotypic trait, right? So what phenotype is the expression, the physical expression of a gene. Genotype is the precursor, you know, the genetics that cause that gene, right? So when we now talk about genotype, we're talking about all the genes in your body and how they are arranged, right, and how that affects, you know, how your nose is or how your ears are, or even down to, you know, whether you are at risk to have breast cancer or prostate cancer. You know, so those are the, you know, you need that your genetics basically says all of these things. Even down to what foods your body can actually process. Are you lactose intolerant? That's the lactose intolerance is a phenotype, but there is a gene that causes that.
Yeah. I mean, you've worked some of the biggest companies in the world, and then you decided to come back to Africa. Let's not say Nigeria, because you have an Africa-wide vision. You
know? Okay.
What brought you back, as in why?
Well, so I always knew leaving Africa that I was going to come back. So for me, it wasn't I was trying to run away, as we have people do these days. No offense, but I knew that I was trying to develop myself, get the relevant experience to start something that actually brought Africa healthcare to the global, you know,
so
conversation.
So how long were you away from Africa?
Sorry?
How long were you away from Africa?
A little bit more than a decade.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was both in the UK and the US.
All right. But your heart was still in Africa.
That's cliche, right? It sounds cliche.
All right, we're going to take a break on the show this morning. It is a business half hour. We have Abasi Enebong in the studio with us. He's CEO of 54Gene.
Yeah.
And Taiwo Oyewole from Nairametrics as well. We'll be right back after this. We still have our guest in the studio, business half hour. It is Taiwo Oyewole in the studio with us and Abasi Enebong from 54Gene. And quite interesting, some lady came on the show from 54Gene as well to talk about what your options were and the tests you could do. I did one, the ancestral one, so I'm looking forward to my result. So
thank
how does
you.
It go? Will you tell me if I'm Kenyan? Maybe I have some Kenyan blood in me. I have some Tanzanian.
We'll know in a bit. Maybe you're actually an alien and the system can't read who you are.
You know, there's a Cameroonian fight at the moment. Somebody from Cameroon who's claiming to be Nigerian. You know,
we used to be one. So until the separation,
until separated, right?
Whether it was the 60s or 70s or there about that.
So,
there's a welcome back to Business and Foreign Partnership in Nairametrics. I still have Abasi here, Dr. Abasi here in the studio.
Thank
with
you.
Us in here. So, some people might argue that the healthcare sector or of the startup ecosystem in Nigeria has been marginalized, hasn't gotten the kind of funding that or attention that it required. I mean, I have some information here from the research team, saying that fintech startups got 32% of all funding in African startups in 2018, while healthcare just got 1.5%. So why do you think the figures for your space are lower? Is it because healthcare challenges in Africa, or people just generally don't see the value?
I think it's multifaceted. So I think it's both from a supply and demand perspective. So from supply, I would say that is... Okay, so basically, investors are averse to healthcare, to the risk that healthcare businesses might pose. And that's also because we, as a country, as a people, we haven't actually built the business of healthcare. We still have hospitals and pharmacies and labs. And in Nigeria, that's what the healthcare industry is. Now, if you went to other more mature markets, sorry, we also have HMOs, right? But if you went to other more mature markets, you would see that there's multiple types of healthcare HMOs. There's multiple types of providers, that's hospitals, different types of pharmacies. You have specialty pharmacies, retail pharmacies, and then you have service providers in between that do all sorts of different things, you know, and it's a real ecosystem. Whereas here in Nigeria, we have very fragmented, siloed hospitals where one man can set up a hospital. Ideally, you should be having groups of people set up hospitals or even these disparate...
So they bring their specializations people. Together to...
Yeah, form. Or forming hospital groups so that they can leverage on things like group purchasing power and stuff like that. So essentially... investors have not really, you know, I don't think they have that appetite that much. But then on the other side, it's really also the types of companies that were set up or that have been in the healthcare sector. Prior to just a few years ago, I'm not trying to criticize anyone who was here before then. The companies were not really solving major problems. You know, it was mostly electronic medical records. Everyone was doing electronic medical records. You know, and the question is, what problem is that really solving? I mean, it's solving a problem, but it's incremental. Because again, they don't even know... but, you know, it's... What do you even do with electronic medical records when you get the records? You see, so it was, oh, we'll just provide this service. But there is a business behind the EMR industry that people who are in the space in Nigeria don't even understand that could actually connect them to a global market to command even more in terms of valuation, right? And so you had few companies doing really trying to solve real problems. I think that's changing now with the likes of MedSAF, which, you know, it's now helping to procure drugs. You also have MDAS, Medical Device as a Service, a group of guys who are innovating in the innovative space, in the diagnostic space. You have Life Bank and Air Bank providing blood and oxygen to hospitals where people are really dying because of lack of blood and oxygen.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tragic. I lost a friend to that because there's no oxygen. And I saw a video recently as well, and over the weekend.
How can that be solved, really? So, in fact, even I don't want to mention the person, but one of my friend's sister recently passed because of...
I had a friend who passed like 3 weeks ago based on that.
Lack of oxygen. And the hospitals are not sued. Can you...
You know, I mean, we can look at that. I mean, the myriad of challenges. And you've picked one particular area, which I think a lot of people are not necessarily paying attention to.
Yeah.
I mean, you require a high level of specialization.
Yeah.
Has it been getting the kind of... resources that you need to be able to get this done? Staff, for example, you know, has it been? I mean, for what you do, I imagine you need constant electricity to be able to store these things, you know, the freezers and so on and so forth like that. So how do you get it done?
Yeah, so for what we do, so in addition to the biobank, we are building a lab, right, that would be able to provide some of the diagnostics that we don't currently offer in Nigeria, where we still send samples abroad. And by being able to offer them here, you know, we can offer them to labs and hospitals. So be a lab for labs, you know, as well as direct to consumer. But like you said, it's expensive. We have to provide at the moment upwards of 70 kVA electricity for ourselves off grid 24/7. You know, that's expensive. If we're doing this in some other African countries, we wouldn't need to spend that money, right? Because we will get that from the national grid, but we have to provide that.
Is that your biggest challenge, power?
Power is one. Talent. talent is always a big challenge, you know, because again, because of the highly specialized skill sets we need.
But the potential is there.
The potential is there. And so one of the things we're doing is, yes, we've brought in people, Nigerians, you know, from, who have practiced abroad and who have that specialization. But we're also matching them with locals, you know, people who went to schools in Nigeria and studied theoretically, may not have done so much practicals, right? So in that way, we're looking at how we can also build up the local sector, you know, give them the skills through what we're doing. So talent is usually a big issue.
You sorted the funding side now, so talent and power. power shouldn't be an issue anymore.
We've not sorted the funding side.
You're still raising.
We're going to keep raising.
It's a huge task. No doubt.
I mean,
Stop with funds. You need funds all the time.
Oh yeah, and what we are building. I mean, we can't say everything yet because certain things are, you know, mature over time. But we're building something very exciting. And this is just the beginning, right? And so...
So how do you gather the DNA? I'm curious. How do you get it?
So the DNA, we work in hospitals. So we are in 10 public hospitals at the moment, spread across the 6 geopolitical zones in Nigeria. The hospitals we are in give us access to nearly 2 million patients a year. We don't recruit all patients. And even when we recruit, it's purely voluntary, right? So we talk to like cancer patients because we're collecting samples from specific disease areas at this for the start, right? So cancer, cardiovascular, that's like hypertension, heart disease, metabolic diseases like diabetes, thyroid disorders, Alzheimer's, dementia, so neurodegenerative, and sickle cell, because that's a problem that is really African, right? Yeah. And the research in sickle cell in the past 20 years, just one drug was launched for sickle cell, and that drug was to treat a symptom. Now, compared to other disease areas, you have multiple drugs launching yearly. And so that shows you that the R&D, research and development around sickle cell, is really poor. And that's again because the global, you know, heads of the pharmaceutical industry are not really focused on it. And so we have doctors, we have more than 50 specialists across the country who work with us. And at the same time, we go through all the ethical processes, all the reviews, before we can actually start do any operations in any of those hospitals, and the patients volunteer. So nobody's forced or anything. People volunteer their data.
All your operations are going to be based in out of Nigeria, or you still do some offshore?
So not all that will be based in... So mostly... now, again, remember we said we're Pan-African... biobank, and some countries have certain restrictions. So some countries we're about to begin in have restrictions that you can't take out that data from them.
So
right?
We need to have local presence.
So we need to have local presence. But somehow we're able to then collate all of this and have a unified front. So where it makes sense, for most of our patients in Nigeria, it's in Nigeria, right? The sequencing part of what we do has to be done elsewhere, because even in Africa, we don't have labs that do whole genome sequencing.
So you should take some of these things to Europe or America.
Yeah, so we do the DNA extraction in Nigeria and stuff, and then we just sequence them with very trusted providers and partners who don't even get to see the data, right? So there's checks in place that protect the data, that make sure everything is protected, we are HIPAA compliant, we're GDPR compliant, we use end-to-end encryption at rest and in transit, so everything is safe.
So how many countries are you in now?
So right now we're in Nigeria, and we are about to, we've begun conversations, or we're beginning conversations in 6 African countries.
In 12 months, what would be the one thing, tell me one thing you think you would have wanted to achieve?
In 12 months?
Yes.
There's more than one thing.
Go ahead.
But in 12 months, we'll probably have more than 100,000 data sets.
Okay.
We would be in a number of African countries. We will be providing diagnostic support to the hospitals and patients in the countries we operate in, because we don't just want to be these guys that get access to the data. We want to give back to those healthcare systems. And we might be piloting clinical trials.
Brilliant. What licenses do you need to run to do this there? What permits do you need?
Dude, why are you putting me up on it, all right?
Do you have competition?
I can't, well, with their licenses, I can't give the entire thing out, because again, it's not, everything is not out there, and you have to protect some of the information.
I understand that. But do you have competition in the local markets?
No, not in Africa.
At the moment?
Not at the moment.
Not
moment.
In Africa.
Well, I mean, we are the first commercial we're the first private biobank. So there isn't really any competition. Now, there's people who have samples around, but a biobank is not just about having samples. You need to know what to do. You need to be able to have access to the funds or the right partnerships to extract the data, to make that data meaningful, to contribute that to the global body of research. So there's a lot of different steps that require lots of specialty knowledge and access and relationships. And I will say that we are the only ones doing that now.
But are people coming on board, you know, people patronizing you?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we both locally and internationally.
So, I mean, this is a Hydra Head project. It's got multiple legs, multiple heads, multiple extensions and branches in there. It's a story of, I don't know what to call it. It's almost like it's a rocket fueled startup, you know, essentially, you know, from January till now, and the strides you've been able to achieve.
Thank you.
Once again, want to say big congratulations to you.
Future of health in Nigeria.
Future of health in Nigeria. I think it's only going to get better. I would hope that we will get more government participation, because there's a role for government to both invest in the local health, you know, basically like provide funding, and also try to create the right regulations that support innovation in the healthcare space. But I also see young people, old people, people who are trying to do healthcare differently. Meet some of them coming back, some of them did not even go, you know, anywhere. Well, I mean, like, you have people, both returnees, people who are locals, and all putting their heads together.
So you welcome competition, is what you're saying?
Please do come into this space. We cannot build this space without competition, but I see it also as collaboration, right? So, yes, the pie is too big. You know, that's what I see. And I don't subscribe to the old notions of trying to keep onto the whole pie, because if you're trying to keep onto the whole pie, then you have a small pie. You know, the more you collaborate, the more competition comes in, the more expansive the pie becomes. And so even if you have a slice, that slice is probably bigger than if you had the whole pie.
Part of it is rotten because you can't
actually do it. And we do have companies that technically have the whole pie, but you see that their growth has stopped somewhere. You know, yes, they are lucrative, but they are not growing. We need to grow the healthcare sector, right? And growth, the companies within will then grow as the sector is growing. So please, I welcome collaboration. I also welcome competition. I think competition is good. We need to drive down prices. We need to make sure that only the people who provide the best quality receive, you know, the demand, you know, the supply of patients and resources, because that will, I mean, you need that. You need to shake the system.
And one more request, please. We need to solve the problem of oxygen. It's very key.
So Temi from Airbank is doing a whole lot there, and I hope she will get a lot of support financially too.
One last word.
Yeah.
Any aspiring entrepreneur, one word.
You know, they might call you crazy when you have an outlandish idea. You may not get the right support initially. Don't give up. Maybe you're not talking to the right people, or maybe you're not communicating your story the right way. So figure out how to talk to the right people with the right story, and have doggedness, determination, and patience, perseverance, and you'll get there.
Thank you very much,
Dr. Abasi Enebong. It's been a pleasure having you here today. And once again, congratulations. I know it was no mean feat, in achieving or getting achieving what you achieved so far. This has been our edition of Business Half Hour in partnership with Nairametrics. You can catch the podcast from tomorrow on the Nairametrics website. Bukola.
All right. Patrick says, Lady and Taiwo, thanks for bringing this doctor to your show this morning. Please, we have a brilliant doctor and many others, but government and the enabling environment hasn't helped. Can government please invest in research? We hope so.
Thank you, Bukola. Thank you, Taiwo.